Good evening. It's Wednesday night and it's 7 o'clock, and we're in the middle of quite an interesting adventure with the Secret Talks Volume 5 by E.J. Gold called Work of Grooves. And we're actually in the 15th week somehow. We've made it 15 weeks. How many weeks in a year, Marvin? So we have a ways to go. Okay, so we're not even our first year yet, which we have gotten to in some of the other books. We've made over a year. I think ABD was 62 or 64 weeks. Yeah, I couldn't believe it either. But anyway, this is the 15th week of Work of Grooves, and it's an interesting collection of adventures that the group that EJ was working with at the time in the late 70s, I believe, and that group. And he's demonstrating in this Secret Talks volume how this particular group works and how he worked with that group. So it doesn't read like a textbook that says, here's what a group is. It's a demonstration of what a group is and how he worked with them at those times. And from that, we have been jumping off various topics that come up, and we've recorded those. Each week our scribe marks down in a book what she believes are characteristics of a group that we mentioned during the week, and we start the week off by reading those. So I'm going to go ahead and read those. Is that okay, Marvin?
Yeah.
Okay, this is for last week's, June 21st, and operations of a group. One, use the group to put together a weekly work plan and to reactivate and recharge one's work plan for the week. Otherwise, the momentum can die down. Two, the work can come together with a group, but individually, a lot of the heavy lifting takes place. I just couldn't read your writing. Three, put yourself in a position, i.e. with a group, to do a recital, a test drive of your work. Exercise. Objectively observe yourself this week. Now, I asked some of the people, Pat is not here tonight. Even though you thought this might be Pat, this is actually Paula. Paula and Garrett do a show on Tuesday afternoons called Transcendence, and they both participate in many, many, many of the activities around here. And for me, I'm very fortunate that Paula participates on Wednesday nights right here in the barn with activity, insight, and now she's going to join us since my other two are playing hooky. Okay. So during the class, let me just ask. I've already asked Paula and Marvette. They had a very interesting answers. But Dan, do you remember that we had an exercise last week? Just like the general concept of that there was a last week and there might have been an exercise. Okay. Silverdale, I'm not going to quite ask you yet, okay? You might or might not know. Does anybody else remember the exercise and what it might have been? Apparently others were too, so many of us were. Is anybody answering us over there, Dan? No answers at all. Well, the voice hasn't even reached them yet. It's just going through the Atlantic and then underground. Do you remember, George?
You know, I don't. I'm so embarrassed to say.
Good. All of us are embarrassed because none of us can remember the exercise except me. So the exercise was going off of the third paragraph on the first page of chapter 34, page 80. And I'm going to read the two last paragraphs on this page, starting with only. Only through disillusionment do we learn the truth about others. And if we work very impartially at self-study about ourselves, and then every person in every ordinary life is suitable only for fertilizing. Now, the next paragraph. When we see one good thing in another man, we feel good to learn that he is better than we first think. When we observe ourselves already thinking everything inside is shit, we see something good, we will be happy to find more than just shit. So the exercise was, can you describe one thing about yourself in an objective manner that is good, a good attribute about yourself? And I don't know if anybody remembered that, but I did. And is anybody, Dan? Nobody remembered? Yeah, so no one's probably remembered. That's okay. That's how those things work. And when I asked around here, several people said, yeah, I remember. Some people said, I remember there was an exercise. And then other people thought really hard and they said, oh yeah, there was an exercise you were supposed to objectively tell about yourself. That part, of course, goes down into the second to the last sentence where it says, we already believe we're full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in a group, when I was very, very young, I was in a group in L.A., and I'd had a kind of a breakthrough, and I said to the teacher at the time, I said, gosh, I feel empty, like there's nothing real inside. He looks at me and the teacher goes, it's about right. Not what I expected. I wanted a pat on the back.
It was very revealing.
It was very revealing. So the question, are we able to self-evaluate? We might be able, I think we can do that with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We look around the room right now, we can evaluate other individuals and say, here's a consistent attribute that I've seen, or in some cases over the many, many years, in some cases over the last couple of few years. You know. But those attributes are not, they're not attributes born by the externality of the world. They're not, you're good because you help little dogs, stuff like that. I'm talking about, we actually have within us particular attributes that it's important to understand because we carry those as, that's our duty. That's like, those are the gifts we were given. And that's part of the reason we don't want to face them and say, yes, I've got this, because then how are you doing with that gift?
Yeah.
Like in the Bible, the parable of the talents in the Bible, which I'm not going to go into.
Or in a game, the character features.
Yeah. Like I'm starting back in on Diablo 2, and I'm.
Are you doing the exercise?
No, I don't even know what the exercise is.
Oh,
I'm running a Sork right now who happens to be very good at a combination of lightning, cold, and teleport.
That's pretty cool. In Women's Safari on Tuesday, we're also doing Sorks right now. And the three of us actually are Sorks. And it's been an interesting experiment.
Uh-huh.
Couple the same character.
So that particular sort is unusually good at this play between cold and lightning sort. Usually you're one or the other, right? But this one, I'm about trying to build a combo, because when you get into the hell world, there's the immune, I can't remember, the characters that are immune from lightning, from cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so I can look at that character and I can say, that character has those attributes.
Mm-hmm.
What about this character? Can I say anything? It's an interesting point of reflection, isn't it? And because then we can see, if we can see attributes that you might have, like persistence. I'm not very good at much stuff, but I'm fairly good at showing up. You know, maybe that's nothing, but it's something,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you find your strength sets, you study those strength sets, and you use the one to overcome the weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's good to look at your tool belt every once in a while. You look at your tool belt, well, what's there? You know, a grappling hook or a hammer or something.
Yeah.
But take a look at that and see what you've gathered. You've gathered something. If you're in this work, which you are, these are, you're all experienced operatives. They're not beginners anymore. And if that being the case, you've gathered tools because you are journeyman craftsmen. That's craftspeople. So there's the apprentice and the journeyman and then the master.
Mm-hmm.
We're journeymen. It means we're skilled, pretty damn skilled, which is not the master. Nor do we need to be. Go ahead, Margaret.
I just wanted to say that about the skill of showing up, EJ has said over the years numerous times that one of the things about a school is hanging in there, and that's really important. And if you can hang in there through the thick and the thin, there's some possibilities for you. So it is a very strong skill, and it's not one that everybody has.
That's correct. So would anybody else like to say anything about their newly discovered objective attribute that they'd like to disclose, or shall we move on to chapter 35?
I have one.
We have a volunteer.
I'm very good at organizing things.
Okay.
And to see kind of like the way that things can be put together. I think that's a pretty good attribute.
Good. There you go.
Both.
Probably.
I mean, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The general quality of organizing. Okay, I think everybody here is voting to move on, get off that little hot seat. Dan, is there anybody over there that's a courageous soul?
Well, so far, we have Bernie LaPlante saying, honest about myself, as honest as can be.
Good, Bernie.
So that was...
Let me just say something about that and something about Paola, too, is that at least these, I'm not saying at least, I don't want to do that. These are individuals that are saying, they're courageously saying something. They don't know if they're right. But by saying something, you're saying to the universe, in a sense, you're putting a stake in the ground saying that I live in the world of the essential self, and I'm speaking to that. Ooh, maybe it's a little thing, but it's something. It's not nothing. You're making an announcement, and I like that part. Go ahead.
Art of NGF says, I'm persistent and determined and celebratory and communicate very well with animals.
All of those are critical.
And then Eric Brummel says, at a Red Lion convention way back when EJ asked about talents, I made a few comments. He then said that in ancient times, talent meant measure.
Thank you. Thanks to Eric. I now have to say something about the parable of the talents. Okay. This is in the Bible. Bible is like a Christian book. You may or may not have heard of it. Anyway. So in the Bible, this is in the New Testament, and Jesus tells a parable of these three individuals. So the master leaves the house, and he goes, but I want each of his three servants, he gives a coin called a talent. That was the actual name of the, each one got one. And he left. And so the first servant was very nervous and thought, gosh, I've got to do something to increase that which my master has given me. So he takes this talent and he goes and he starts a business. And he works very hard at the business using this extra money, and he flourishes. The next servant was nervous. He says, I know I have to do something to protect the, to keep this money, but I don't want to lose it, but I should earn something. So he goes to the money lenders, he lends the money, and he earns some interest back on it. The third guy is so afraid, he goes, I'm not going to do anything to harm or lose this for my master. I'm going to take it and bury it in the ground. And then after all of this, the master comes back and he says to the first guy, well, he says to them, well, where's my money? And the first guy says, well, here's what I decided to do. I started a business. It's really flourished. Here it is. And then to the second guy, he goes, well, master, I didn't want to lose it, but I thought I should make some interest income. Here's the principal and interest back. And the third guy, all proud, says, I protected it. I made sure it was never lost. And the master says, oh, you evil, evil servant. And he takes the talent from him, and to the other two, gives back what they had earned. Right in the Bible.
It is. I mean, I was thinking that sometimes it's, one can think that is insecurity, but at the same time it's ego really talking when is you have trouble opening to what
That's
are
right.
the thing.
It's
protecting yourself from just being out and expose it, because that also brings responsibility sometimes.
Absolutely.
If you say, hey, I'm good at doing this, and then everybody starts asking you stuff, that has happened. But
I have organized some stuff for me. Good. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, everybody, Bernie, and who else? And oh, something NG, Art of NG. Okay. Really good. When we share these things, like we were talking the other day, and I say, you know, I often bring up things of my character weaknesses, things I've done, you know, embarrassments and things like that. I don't bring it up for any psychological reason at all, first of all. Let's be straight about that. I bring it up to declare first to this machine, I got you, buddy. You know, I see you. That doesn't mean I can change it, but my attention is on it, and the fine touch of attention starts to change that and convert it. It's been found out. The light is on it a bit. And secondly, I'm also declaring to the world, I am not that. So when you say it out loud, by definition, you're actually saying, I am not that. I'm not attached to it. It is in me, you know. So So there you go. So let's go over to page 35, or the, yeah, 34, you should read the whole thing, but I just thought I wanted to go into something on 35 because it's quite unique. What do you think about reading a little bit? Do you want to try it, or should I just go ahead and read?
I can read some.
You want to try and read
sure.
some? Why don't you get us started and just read maybe a little bit here?
Okay. Chapter 35. Do we need a guide? First, real task of group is to make exact aim both as individual candidate for work and also as a group. What you wish for self more than anything else in life? Is this question right? And then G.
Does work require, Q.
Q.
Yeah.
Does work require a school and teacher, or can it be done alone? G. What is line beyond which you will not pass? Tell the group, define exactly. What could happen so powerful or magnetic you are forced to stop work on self? What could happen so powerful or magnetic you are forced to stop work on self? Something really valuable, not cheap to obtain. Exactly how much you prefer to pay? What currency? Must not go bankrupt in middle of game.
I'll continue just for a couple more paragraphs.
Mm-hmm.
Look back at your life from the vantage point of the last moment of life. See at a glance failures, infirmity, senility, old age. What would you be willing to pay for? Hope of penetrating life and death to a new dimension where all this has no importance. So what would you be willing to pay? So he's bringing this up a couple of times now. You know, what do you pay? What are you willing to pay for the guide? What are you willing to pay for the teacher? What are you willing to pay? Do we even know how to pay? And I think it's pretty simple. Just like in most businesses, people don't know what to do. You know, they don't even know where the very first steps are. And so we have to discover some of that. How do we do this? How do we pay? How do we do these processes? But it makes sense that there should be a payment of some sort, doesn't it? Or does it to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. It's an exchange in a way, you know. I mean.
Mm-hmm. And he goes on that, and I put on that there, you have to be willing, but also able. Those are two different things, willing and able to pay. So some of us might be willing, but not have the wherewithal, the capacity. Okay? Okay, on the very, let's just jump ahead about a little bit here. Next paragraph. When you hire a guide for your work, how do you know he is reliable? How do you know if you even need a guide? Maybe you pay him for nothing. Man can aid you without him. Map can aid you without him. We must know if a guide is necessary and what he is good for. You can know the way, but still be at the mercy of elements and wild animals. What would it take to know, just in ordinary life, forget the work or the school, in ordinary life, when does it seem you need a guide? Can you give some examples? When does it seem need a guide right now.
In a new situation? When you travel somewhere that you haven't been, for example?
Okay. So traveling, you need a guide of some sort. What's a more mundane example? More, you went shopping today. You go shopping? Is this your shop? Did you know what you were going to buy? Yeah, and but you knew already what you were guided as to what, where you're going to go, what you're going to buy, you know, things like that. There's a, so can we discern, and this is probably important to send, get a sense of, can you discern, I need a guide. The next level of that is to ask for help. We're not quite ready for that. It's a little harder. But we can sense, I need a guide. Sometimes you feel uncomfortable, you're psychologically confused. Maybe you need a guide during that time too, but that's just a guide so you feel better. I'm talking a more general guide in the world.
When you're studying something.
Okay, when you're studying something.
It's good to have a guide, some type of guidance.
Yeah, like I'm taking Spanish lessons. I have 3 or 4 books in my house on how to learn Spanish. It does me almost no good.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that about myself, so I engaged a guide, a teacher, who teaches me once or twice a week, and I knew I needed a guide, even though theoretically I could understand it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, a majority, I don't know, one of the reasons, probably the type of business of service is you can actually make a lot of money because the majority of people in many ways, like changing diet, doing something different, learning a language, you can do it by yourself. It is possible, but many of us don't have the persistence or either the resources, the motivation to keep going by yourself. So people pay to others to actually guide them through the process, even though it might seem that they have access to the information or what is supposed to happen during that learning.
They do.
They want to have a guide that actually makes them feel comfortable, that it's helpful when they are in trouble. So it makes a lot of sense. Guidance.
Have you ever done a search on Google? Of course. And then you get back, what, 23 million hits, you know. How do you know what to look for? How do you know, so let's say you're going to take up Japanese archery. How would you even start, you know, and you type that in the search engine and, you know, 7,000 things come up. You don't know what to even do.
Mm-hmm.
So you would attempt to find somebody, help me start this. I am going to do it. Can you help me get started?
Mm-hmm.
What are the first steps? So can you have a sense of when you need a guide? It'll work in this group as well. Okay? Go ahead, Ben.
Multiple Sparks says, when I'm trying to learn Cafe Press.
Okay. Yeah.
And Eric Rummel says, today at work, the video playing in the dining hall was the original One Toke Over the Line, the guide in action. And he says, the D2 Bardo manual is another form of guide.
Yeah.
And then a little earlier there were some comments from Muscle Spark. Since I don't see myself as I am, everything is skewed by my illusion. But it sounds like it might be good not to bury that at the moment.
Correct.
Pianjo says, my friends say I am very tenacious, and I concur since even people who don't like me agree. And Eric Rummel says, I owe, it's off to work I go.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I think the point of this guide comment is there are many guides out there. There are guides. If you seek them, you will find them. But you have to sometimes actually take a step forward. And a lot of times we don't seek a guide because of preconceptions we have about the individual. Like I have preconceptions about everybody in this room.
Hey, and Dave.
Yes, go ahead, George.
You know, I go back to the very first paragraph of the chapter itself. The first real task of a group is to make exact aim, both as an individual candidate for work and also as a group. So this is directing our attention to what is our exact aim. If our exact aim is to awaken our essential self and allow it to participate in our ordinary life, or our aim is to be born again in the Christian sense of the word, so that we mm-hmm. might see and enter into the kingdom of God, then that will condition the kind of guide that we are looking for. And anything that helps us find a guide, whether a book or an individual that achieves that aim, is good. And anything that hinders us from finding that kind of a guide, a particular book or person, is bad. And there are many good aims in life. Some people might want to learn Spanish, for example, and they need a different kind of a guide. But anyway, that's for me a qualifier. What is your aim? And then you'll be in a position to find a guide.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, you need a guide whenever you're in unfamiliar territory or you're trying to do something you don't know how to do. And in the case of group work, part of it is that people, if they're not used to working in a group, they don't know how. And part of it is that there's the illusion of that we think we already know. And so there may be different guides, or it could be embodied in the same guide, but there has to be somebody who has the skill set to help the group to actually work. I want to say remember its aim, but that may be the task of the people in it. But at least to not fall under the illusions that they tend to. I'm sort of approaching it because I'm not stating it clearly.
Okay.
It's like you need someone who's been there already.
Okay, so Dan talked about two attributes. One thing he said was, by definition, you need a guide when you're in unknown territory. Is that what you said? So you're in unknown territory. Since you don't know the territory, how can you evaluate a guide? Pretty tough, huh?
And I don't know. I mean, to me, actually, even when you know sometimes some stuff, you might still need guidance. You know,
absolutely.
It's not necessarily exclusive to when you don't know something.
Okay.
There might be a different type of guidance, you know.
It would take
a different form. Uh-huh.
Okay. So, by the way,
David, I might just interject that, you know, we might have a high school teacher that teaches us subject appropriate material for a teenager in high school, but a different type of a guide might appear when we enter into college and we need a different level or a different set of information at a higher level. And I think that yet another tangential point here is the value of a group itself. Each of us brings a little bit of the whole picture, and so we contribute to one another's, by being a group, we contribute to one another as multiple guides in pursuit of a single aim.
That's right. In a sense, and this is something I think that we're touching on, is that the group, if it is cohesive in itself, provides a form of guidance.
Mm-hmm.
The group itself, the group energy itself, mm-hmm. and it's not so much in that it gives data, it gives information, but it gives a bar of excellence, and that in itself acts as a guide.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, huh? Okay.
Bernie asks, do we choose a master or does the master choose us?
Yeah, well, I think it's a rhetorical question. You know, we don't know the answer to that. But it's a great question to hold, to keep yourself in that position of that not knowing is a wonderful place to be. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these things, a lot of the times, there doesn't need to be an answer. There needs to be a process, what I call a alchemical process of transformation, just by this yearning for the answer. Like in this case, does the teacher choose me or did I choose that teacher? And maybe it's a little both. Yeah, should we go on?
Yeah,
go ahead and read. Go ahead and read the next thing.
Whatever. Well, it wasn't the next thing. It's just that, like, my eye caught this. When you hire a guide for your work, how do you know he is reliable? How do you know if you even need a guide? Maybe you pay him for nothing. Map can aid you without him. We must know if a guide is necessary and what he is good for. You can know the way but still be at the mercy of elements and wild animals. Maybe we just need a cook, not a guide. He can be paid less, and we still have his company and need not be troubled for food.
Yeah. So, it's not a simple process. It's not a totally simple. So let's just, we're going to move on to the next page, page 84, and I'm going to start at the beginning, the middle of page 84. Organizations represent the work, but are not the work. Organization is necessary to those people only superficially interested who might support the work, but the work itself cannot survive under an organization, only beside it. Work cannot be active and organization passive. However, the organization should appear active and the work passive, those not yet entangled in the work, to make it seem safe. And that reminds me, Silverdale, of the interaction between the essential self and the human biological machine as well. One's passive, appears passive, one appears active, etc.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy there, David. Of course, we all have ordinary lives in which we have to attend to the daily necessities of life. We have to pay our rent. We have to eat on a regular basis. We have to engage in social amiabilities. That all appears to be very active. But in the meantime, we're dead serious about arousing our essential self and making it the center of our gravity, which would be invisible to anybody on the outside, but which to us is the most active part of ourselves, while we're passively, although it looks like we're being active, attending to the daily necessities of life.
Well, so that's why it's sometimes it's called the hidden work. And then flipping over to top of 85, had we made decisions as a group, she told us, not only might we have accomplished our task, but we might also have given ourselves data for work. What does he mean here by how do we make decisions as a group? How would we go about that? What are some elements that you might, how does a group make a decision? It's the same question that Bernie asked, you know, do I select the teacher, does the teacher select me? You know, it's like, does the does the group make a decision, or does the decision arise out of individuals, you know, talking back and forth? But as it, so as a group, it goes in with the very first part that George read earlier about the aim. The one aim we have is to work on self and to develop our essential self. The method of doing it might be a decision that the group makes. For instance, we made a decision tonight to get together for a little while, right? It was a decision that everybody that's here made it as part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, individually made it and then came together and formed the group. But it's an interesting process about how to make a decision within a group. We know that the basic concept is aim, that our basic aim is work on self and the development of our essential self. How do we go about that? And I think that we're reading some methodologies in this book, that Secret Talks 5, but also we're experiencing it here together, the interface. When Eric talks about going to work and what happens there, you know, that's an example. And muscle spark and beginning to self-reflect, and Bernie and others speaking. Okay, what else? We had also missed the most obvious way of working on this project. This was a point he came back to several times during the evening, that when reading or discussing an idea, we would refuse the most obvious meaning and look for more obscure ones. When I asked what bird does most, you say peck, scratch, sing. Nobody says birds fly. G then slowly took his reading glasses from his pocket and, putting the collar up on his jacket, silently gestured to us to gather around him. He quickly glanced around the room, then began to whisper conspiratorially that we were a group of secret agents, all working for different governments, our own personal aims. We had not realized that we no longer could afford loyalty to our home countries, that we would have to become double or even triple agents to work together in order to really make something. We not only do not know how to get data, we have no data to get data. Through a combination of curiosity, driving force and luck, G was given data and the means for rediscovery and practical use of ideas. So that's an interesting, I'm going to read that again. We not only do not know how to get data, we have no data to get data. Through a combination of curiosity, driving force and luck, G was given data and the means for rediscovery and practical use of these ideas. America I discover, but not America I invent. Long before I discover, America was there. We'll be there long after we have forgotten. We'll be there when rediscovered and given another name. For now, work together on mission. Soon, we have another meeting, same time, same place, like next Wednesday. So what is the mission? And what do you think about this idea of like this secret mission, this secret agent? If you're an agent, you know, whispering, what's the plan going to be? What are we going to do? We're going to go here and there. We all know we're on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about the mission, nor do we inform our home countries. I like that a lot, you know, that it's like, that's the machine. And good agents help each other out, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you do that? How do you help each other? Is it able to, are you able to help somebody else in your own group?
Sharing experiences. It's
sharing experiences, yeah.
With just sometimes telling and sharing something that you have lived. It's enough for another person to have a realization or have a new insight of how to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, there's probably deeper ways also to help.
There are deeper ways to help. It's but sometimes it becomes clear around you opportunity to help somebody. And other times, you might notice somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the ashram, you notice somebody gets stuck in a wall or something, right?
Yeah.
And maybe it's very clear that they need some help at that point. So you can help them. So what we come out of this chapter is that there is a group aim. And consider the reason we feel a fealty for each other is we have a similar aim. Our aim is, it's pretty clear to me that I'm common to the aim here. We're all common to whatever that aim is, and I like being around it. Then other stuff we discover.
I like the way it's kind of building, because like with all our last chapters, for example, the one of not being a sucker ever,
mm-hmm.
and certain ideas of how this is like, there was also another about help too. I think he mentioned something that you cannot help someone that is not actually open to receive.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot know something that you already know, and all these kind of ideas. And then getting here is like, okay, so what do we share if this is not about a kind of a fraternity or, you know, just about like feeling good with each other and feeling that we are feeling similar things. So here is like, okay, the aim and what we share is that,
right.
is what we want to accomplish doing this and being here. It's just interesting how it starts to get more and more rich, the idea of what a group might be.
What about this, can you say something about that second to the last paragraph, George?
Yeah, let me, what chapter, what page is that?
885.
Yeah, okay, oh yeah, okay, so the Discovering America, that's right. So, of course, we imagine that EJ is the author of that paragraph, so he's saying something, but for myself, who believes that he's a extension of Gurdjieff, I interpret this as something that Gurdjieff would have said regarding America. And so without trying to say too much, just Look, we're all interested in awakening our central self and making it the center of our gravity of experiencing. That is, we want to spiritualize our the materiality of our physicality. And that is essentially what America would be if we discovered it. If we could discover a way to awaken our spirit, our essential self, and make it the predominant electrical field of our daily existence, we would have found America. And so in this paragraph, Gurdjieff is essentially saying that really, I think by accident, he happened to have been able to kind of figure out how that worked for him, and now he had data. It's possible. Once he had that data, he began to have other paths that he could explore. Well, what can I do now that I have an awakened essential self? And of course, not unlike EJ, you know, he commanded a lot of personal power that was evident to everybody around him, even if those around him didn't quite know how he'd done it. Well, partly by luck and, you know, partly by learning some stuff. And so anyway, that's what I think that next to last paragraph is all about.
Yeah, curiosity, driving force, and luck.
Yeah.
And I worked with a guy way, way a long time ago named Richard Rose, and he was primarily a Tibetan. He was an American, but he had followed a Tibetan Buddhist path, and he had reached a certain level of enlightenment. And so and he happened to work with men. His group was a group, men's group, and art is iron. And so they always be asking him questions. Well, what about this? What about this? And so if you're enlightened, you're just like destined to be enlightened, right? And he goes, I guess so. And I was also destined to work my ass off for it. And just like here, so EJ may have, or in that paragraph it says, combination of curiosity and luck. Maybe he had luck, but if he hadn't had the deep curiosity and the driving force, it may not have taken, and then he might not have been able to discover America. So we have a certain level of driving force and certainly a curiosity. You wouldn't be. Nothing is requiring anybody to be here. Nothing. And or at any of the other events during the week, no one's required to go to any of those things. Because, but out of curiosity and a particular force that you have, we all continue to come back. Mm-hmm. And we gather something from that. So anyway. Those are just some thoughts I had. How are you doing over there, Dan? Anybody else want to venture about their objective quality, or should we just call it a night? That's Beverly. Like the fifth time. Maybe she's... For now, work together on mission. Work together on mission. Even if you imagine it, imagine the mission of the group coming together. Even when you're not there and you can imagine it in a proper way, you will be part of that mission. Okay? Well, that's pretty much what I had. I think we're at the end of this one. Unless you have anything to say, George, help us out.
No, listen, it sounds to me, reading this next to the last paragraph, our mission should be to discover America. We have the curiosity, the driving force, and maybe with a little luck we'll find that America for ourselves. And, of course, just like Columbus discovering America for real, it turned out to be a pretty large continent with a lot of resources and even some indigenous people.
That's right. Yeah. So, anyway, we'll take it up again next week then at on Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and we'll start in on chapter 36 with the title Necessity. And does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, please read it before you come to class, and evidence of your reading it will be collected at the door. So. No exercise. You don't have to do any exercises this week.
Just 36, David?
Is that Harry?
That's true.
Yes, I was just making sure of what you said.
Yeah,
chapter
no
36, correct?
Exercise, other than... All right.
They can try to do a one of last week.
What was it again? I can't remember.
Can find something objective about yourself that is positive.
A positive quality. All right. That seems kind of impossible. If you'd like to do the exercise, it's worth putting your attention on and being in that struggle.
And it's not an idea. I mean, like, you really will find out is by observing yourself during this week, for sure, that you will have probably more than one.
There's a certain purity about these concepts that we're studying here together in this group. They're not dangerous in a sense. So when you get into the conundrum of trying to discover something, there's a heat that will occur. There's a little tension of sorts. That tension is the tension of the alchemical fire, and that's what starts to create some of the change that we become. So take a shot. Take a shot at the bloody exercise, all right? All right. Thank you all for coming, and we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7. Thank you, Harry. Thank you, George.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Paula. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.